Invite us to hear now this gospel from Matthew 2, read by Adana Nisley.
After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.
What gets your attention? When you look through a magazine, what makes you stop at certain pages? Is it the title or the pictures? When you go to the mall, what causes you to stop and browse a certain store? Is it the display of items, the colors, the fragrance, the name? What makes you pause when you're channel surfing to watch a particular television show or commercial? Is it the sound of the music or the announcer's voice? When you look back over your last year, what do you remember? As you're thinking about starting a new year, what do you want to do different? When you read scripture, what makes you pause and ponder? What questions do you ask? What do you wonder about? What keeps drawing your attention? This morning in Sunday school class, we were looking at Isaiah 44, and Tim Nisley's father raised the question. We were looking at the Jews in exile. Did the wise men learn from the Jews in exile in Babylon? Our senses are bombarded 24/7 by thousands of images and sights and sounds. Marketing companies spend significant amounts of money to determine how to get our attention for whatever they're trying to sell or promote. Politicians have highly paid staff members who do nothing but analyze how to get publicity for their candidates, so that we will be drawn to vote for them. I wonder, what would you have used to get the world to turn aside and look at a tiny baby? How would you turn the world's attention to an infant wrapped in swaddling cloth and laying in a manger in a stable behind some inn in a little Judean town? A trumpet blast? A lightning bolt, a thunderous announcement from Mount Sinai. When God wanted to get the attention of his people, To look into his own infant's face, he sent angels. When God wanted to get the attention of the nations of the world, God used a star. It was commonly believed in the ancient world that heavenly signs accompanied the birth of great figures. A star drew the attention of the wise men into a journey they could have never imagined. How did and does God draw our attention? What did the star reveal? The star revealed wise men on a journey, whom we don't know much about other than they came from the east and were foreigners, Gentiles, who sought the new king of the Jews. Wise men we have built a lot of tradition around, that there were three, probably because of the three gifts, that they were kings or astrologers, that their names were Melchior, an old man with a long white beard, Caspar, a young and beardless guy, and Balthazar, black and bearded, that they came from Arabia, Babylon, or Persia. What did the star reveal? King Herod, also known as Herod the Great, a non-Jew, whom the Roman Senate had called King of the Jews. Herod's reign was noted for splendor and construction. He built many theaters, monuments, altars, fortresses. His greatest work was the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem, greatly increasing its precincts and raising it to a more worthy height. He planned this to act as his eternal memorial. Herod was a tyrant who could not tolerate any contenders for his throne. He was power-hungry, ruthless, controlling. He murdered his wife, three sons, mother-in-law, brother-in-law, uncle, and many others. It's no surprise when we see his reaction to the kings, the wise men not returning to him. Herod was also frightened because a new king was the ultimate threat to his own position. And if the rumors would reach Rome, the rulers at that time, they might come down on him. Caesar would not be pleased. And all Jerusalem was frightened with him. I remember when we lived in Damascus, and the son of the president was killed in an accident. Whole of Syria and Damascus was frightened because nobody knew what the future would hold without the one who was supposed to rule after the current ruler. So Herod calls together the Jewish leaders, and this calling together echoes, because it uses the same words, the sinister gatherings of the Jewish leaders later on during the trial and crucifixion accounts, pointing to some dark clouds on the horizon. Herod, who knew that this king of the Jews was the Christ, God's anointed one, because he asked the religious leaders not what they knew about the king of the Jews, but what they knew about the Messiah. What did the star reveal? The star revealed the leaders of the people, the chief priests and scribes, the experts in the scriptures, those who devoted their lives to studying them, those who identified Micah 5, verse 2, as the answer to the Magi's question, pointing to the little town of Bethlehem, but showing no initiative or interest in checking it out themselves, unable to translate the words into action, having the scrolls but missing the Messiah's birth. Pawns in Herod's game. The Jewish people and their king are upset by the birth of the deliverer, the Messiah. while the foreigners, the Gentiles, seek to honor him. What did the star reveal? The star revealed Jesus as the center of a storm around whom the entire text with its actions and reactions revolves. Journeys are made, meetings are convened, prophetic history is brought into play. Emotions are exposed, ranging from the worshipful to the fearful. So how does everyone respond? How do we respond? The wise men knew their history, their writings, the signs of nature, the world around them. They were ready to recognize the star when it appeared, pointing them to the new king of the Jews. So the Magi embark on a journey. Not a journey to bring their gifts necessarily, but a journey to pay homage, to worship. When you look in verse 2. Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage or worship, depending on your translation. The Magi set out, willing to follow the sign and seek confirmation of its significance. They set out and travel for weeks or months before they reach Jerusalem. Their arrival signals the fulfillment of Simeon's prophecy, the text we looked at last week. This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel and to be a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed and a sword will pierce your own soul too. And who says men never stop to ask for directions? It might not have been their best choice. Time to wake up. They didn't make the best choice in who they asked, because what reigning tyrant willingly travels to pay homage to a child born into a peasant family who's being proclaimed as his successor? But their arrival probably didn't go unnoticed in Jerusalem. Their questions must have caused some stir, and so they end up asking Herod. They journeyed with diligence, with persistence, driven by desire to worship the new king. How does everyone respond? Well, Herod knows who to call upon for the research and answer to this question. And it appears not to be a problem for the religious leaders to produce an answer. And so Herod calls the wise men back to him because he also claims to want to worship them, the new king. And so they should tell him what they find out, though we know it is only a ruse. The irony is that Herod unknowingly states what in truth he should be doing. The one who rules with violence and fear needs to go and pay homage to the power of compassion and justice. Give himself to the grace of the child whom the Magi are seeking. Why didn't Herod arrest the Magi on the spot? Have them executed for insurgency? Because what good does it do to kill the seekers when it is the one they seek that needs to be eliminated? Caesar would not have been happy if Herod had botched this. So the Magi I sent on the last 5 miles of their trip to worship the king in the little town of Bethlehem. And the Magi continue the journey and find the child. And what do they do first? What is their biggest gift to the child? In verse 11, same word as in verse 2 and in verse 8. And when they have found sorry. On entering the house, they saw the child was Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and worshipped him. And only then do they offer their gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Henry Nouwen says, true ministry goes far beyond the giving of gifts. It requires the giving of self. That is the way of him who did not cling to his privileges, but emptied himself to share our struggles. When God's way becomes known to us and practiced by us, hope emerges. And after offering the gifts, still attentive and open, the wise men respond to the warning in the dream and leave by another road. John Bell from the Iona community, in his book Cloth for the Cradle, has a monologue from the wise men which ends with the words, and we discover we have to go home by another way. That is the trouble with God. He does not let you leave as you came. He sends you back, stripped of your presumptions, making for home by another way. Tim Sams had shared the last Sunday or so about the situation in Nigeria and the letter he got from Obed and Fena, people we went to seminary with, and the situation there. 12 persons were killed yesterday in Jos with a bomb-like explosion. I'm staying with our security. We had received rumors that our neighbors planned to disrupt our Christmas celebrations. The young people are agitated. We're just telling everybody to keep calm. And then a couple days later, Christ was almost killed the day he was born by the rulers of this world. On God's instruction, Joseph and Mary had to come to Africa, Egypt, to save his life for the ministry of peace building across ethnic communities. He came to do. 800 came to our church yesterday. Worship was canceled in many churches in Jos yesterday for fear of more attacks. I must say we worshiped with fear too. Down the street from us, about 3 minutes' walk, just before the sermon, the Muslim youth from the town were rushing to swoop on the worshippers when the boys on vigilante spotted them and had to rush in and told the pastor, who had to let everyone escape. I'm glad no one was hurt. Christians in many parts of the world are discovering another way with the threats and struggles. What are our struggles as we follow the light of Christ, as we worship him where we live, in our lives, through our work? In a recent media article, a research survey at a large church in the southeast of the U.S. showed that only 11% of people find meaning and connection between their work and their faith. And even those reported a lack of confidence and fulfillment in their ability to integrate their faith at work. Another article referred to young women who make career choices based on a quest for jobs with meaning, variety, and true work-life balance. They exhibit a lack of interest in conforming to the way it's always been done. As we embark on this new year, what is the new way of expressing our faith in our time, in our place? I recently read an article about a man in Ohio, Ari Souder, who started the company, woodworking company, the largest producer of ready-to-assembly furniture in the U.S. Busloads of children toured that factory. One day, something caught Ari Souder's attention. An employee set the controls on an automated cutting machine and turned around to chat with the children. It struck Airy that the automation might mislead youngsters to think life was as easy as pushing a button. He decided to tell the real story, so future generations would understand and remember. And thus, he planted the seed of Sauda Village, one of Ohio's leading tourist attractions, to recreate pioneer life. It's amazing what you can do when you don't know it can't be done. With hard work, diligence, and entrepreneurship. A place where people have fun, rich in history and hospitality. Not only the visitors enjoy it, but the staff as well. At a time when many kids are so preoccupied with iPods, texting, and electronics that they don't even interact with real people, they're offering a non-digital environment that slows down the pace and allows for reflection and creative thinking. Many of the guests that pass through their gates every year write back to say, "This was a healing place for my soul," because it allowed them to work through troubles in a refreshed and renewed way. As we travel on our journey this year, may we live our faith like the Magi, diligently studying, willing to journey, and desiring to worship Jesus the Christ, and at times going home by another way. Amen.